one of our core teachers who's been our core teacher for many, many years, Stephen Tierney. Stephen is an ordained Zen priest in the tradition of Suzuki Roshi, who was the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center, along with Tassajara and Green Gulch. Stephen's been practicing for many decades and is a retired professor of psychology and still has a private practice even in his retirement. So Stephen, welcome.
Thank you, Carl. Good to see you all. Nice to be here. I found a wonderful lyric from a song on Friday by a jazz singer named Jose James. And it says, "It's not that I am out of mountains to climb. It's just that sometimes you have to stop to consider the one you've already got under your feet. It's not that I'm out of mountains to climb. It's just that sometimes you have to stop to consider the one you've already got under your feet." And I think that that's a beautiful lyric for the moment that we find ourselves in our country. I want everyone to think for just a minute about where you were on Saturday morning when you got the news that the American people had chosen love over hate, unity over division. And so just for one moment, take yourself back and take a deep breath, and maybe you got the news earlier or later. I myself was leading a group of 26 people through a suicide prevention workshop on Saturday. And all of a sudden, we were about an hour in and someone squealed. And I thought, in this kind of workshop, that's not a good thing. And then in another Zoom screen, someone burst into the room and shouted some news, and that person got up and ran out. And within moments, there was all of this emotion and feeling and so forth. And so fists were pumps and people were smiling. And it reminded me of something that I had been missing for a very long time in a certain way, which is the Shantideva teaching of pure delight. And Shantideva says that in his poem, The Bodhisattva Way, that we must experience sheer delight. And basically, there is in recovery these days a sentiment that getting people to come to 12-step recovery programs is about attraction, not promotion. So people should see that positive change has occurred, that something good is happening, and that's why they would want to come. And in Shantideva's teachings about pure delight, that's what he says, that we should experience the gifts of the Buddha and the Buddha path as sheer delight, that the Buddha came to teach one thing, that there is suffering and an end to suffering, and it's that end to suffering. And so I hope that all of you had a moment on Saturday, or several moments, a lot of moments, in which you said, I feel maybe a weight off my shoulders. I feel whatever it is you feel, and whatever side of the spectrum you were on, one must at least have thought, this campaign is over and my mailbox won't be so stuffed in my email. So whatever you were thinking, there must have been a moment on Saturday when it's like, oh, finally, this, one more thing about 2020 has ended. And I really don't want to talk about politics, even though I'm thinking about that moment of delight, and it's certainly connected to that. But I think we've all talked about politics a lot in 2020, and Lord knows we'll have plenty of opportunities to do so again. But I want us, no matter what our politics happen to be, to take this moment to really think about what that felt like. Because I think for many people, my experience of checking in with friends and associates and people in workshops over the weekend was that people had that sense of happiness, that sense of unbounded joy and delight. And that is what the promise of Buddhism offers to us. So while we're not talking about politics, I think it's fair, and a few of us were chatting just before this meeting started, and it was perfect fodder for what I'm wanting to talk about. But almost from the moment that we first clapped our hands or, threw off our yoke and said, we're here. And you could turn on the television. When I finished my workshop, I turned on the television and there were these lovely pictures of Philadelphia the streets of Philadelphia and the streets of New York and the gastro and the streets of Chicago and the streets of Paris and the streets of Berlin. And it was amazing. And it was delightful. And there were all these people just having a sense that a decision had been made that was about the possibility of connection and love and honesty. And that felt so good to me. And then I had to immediately turn the TV off and moderate my own agenda of who I spoke to and how I spoke to them, because almost from that first moment of throwing off the yoke, and some of you may have experienced this, there were people saying, oh, but January 5th, we have something to do in another state, or, you know, this guy's not gonna go away, he's gonna be around. And it's like, okay, yeah, you know, I get all that. My concern, my worry, is that we've lost a little bit, maybe over the last 4 years, but maybe over a lifetime of suffering of various kinds, real, very real suffering, that we've lost the ability to take a deep breath and say, damn, this feels good. This is wonderful. And folks worked to create that thing of wonder. And so we should take some time to enjoy it, is what I'm saying. And that I think we have learned to temper our delight with, oh no, what's gonna come next? If I go look at Twitter, what am I gonna read? Or if I turn on CNN, what calamity am I gonna hear about? And I had somebody call me who's normally a very upbeat person. She said to me, I just watched 60 Minutes, this was on Sunday night, and it's not over, the president, blah, 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 whatever it was 60 Minutes said, I didn't watch it. But I said to her, I said, I tried to call you yesterday, were you excited yesterday? And she said, for a minute. And I said to her the same thing I'm saying to all of us tonight, go back to that minute, bring mindful awareness to that minute, remember it, savor it, feel it. You know, Americans have said yes to togetherness, and yes to the sisterhood and brotherhood and diversity and inclusion. That's an amazing thing. Let's just celebrate that. You know, we've had many years to do the other. You know, and I don't think I'm actually living in denial. And I think, you know, most of us have witnessed and experienced and participated in what went on in the last 4 years. And we know that a whole bunch of people having witnessed, experienced, and participated in that, decided to cast their votes for that to continue. But there's plenty of time for us to figure that out, or to try to do meta and extend what we feel and the love that we know and the possibility that we feel out to people that we know and care about who are still, you know, borderline nervous as they could be, but also out to those folks. You know, that what we hear a lot is from folks on the two wild extremes. And there's lots and lots and lots of folks in the middle who are just there. And I think that, you know, we have this opportunity through our practice of metta to really say, I'm worried like everybody else and I'm concerned, but there's some sheer joy in what happened on Saturday. And when you looked at those pictures on the television, or if you went out into the streets in Oakland or San Francisco or wherever you might be, you could look around. And I really invite you to think of what those faces, Black and brown, Asian, young and old, men and women and gender non-conforming and transgender, everybody had these looks of, look at this. And I want us to, you know, sort of unfurrow our brows for just a minute, which we've, you know, had 4 years to twist up and wondering to come next, and all too often it did. But we have this opportunity. Jane Hirschfield, in her poem, The Unfinished Business of Living Fully, says, you may do this, I tell you. It is permitted. Begin the story of your life again. Begin the story of your life again. So what I want us to do for the time we have, this hour that we have together today, the few minutes that we have left, is let's be joyful. Let's be really joyful, LGBTQI and others and allies. Let's be Buddhists who follow the advice of Shantideva to welcome delight into our life. Thich Nhat Hanh, interpreting the teachings of Shantideva, said, no, it's not inviting delight into your life. It's throw back the shroud, throw back the cover, and let the light of that delight that is in each one of you illuminate you. Let of that delight that is in within each of us. And man, I think, you know, a lot of us have had the experience recently of not really experiencing that delight. And I think we have opportunities now. You know, when our new vice president said during her speech the other night that every little brown and black girl who sees Madam Vice President knows that this is a country of possibilities. Possibilities that include justice and equality and safety and the pursuit of happiness. So let's just savor that for a minute. That was an amazing, wonderful moment for her to be speaking and for her to take time to think of America's children and for her to remind us of the delight of possibility that we were at a new place. And then, you know, I was thinking that part of the problem for all of us is if you just think of words, you think of delight, denial, despair. Those words are all pretty close. And I think it's within human nature to be realistic about you know, all the situations that we live in. And so I'm not trying to force anybody to not be aware of what we the work that has to still happen and the challenges that we will all face. And I'm not trying to force anybody to be happy. I have been accused over the years of being the Mary Poppins or the Pollyanna of Buddhism because I talk so much about delight and happiness and that it's possible. And I certainly don't mean to suggest that anybody has to, you know, like often it used to be a terrible thing that men particularly, but people would say to each other, smile, we want to see you smile. You have a nice face if you smile. And it was oppressive and wrong and awful. People should have the emotions that they genuinely have. But I think that said, we can still invite ourselves and each other to have that experience. Pema Chodron in her book called Welcoming the Unwelcome says, the Buddha taught that all of us at our essence are good and loving. Because of this basic goodness, we naturally want to be there for others, especially those who are closest to us and those who are in greatest need. We are keenly aware that others need us and that our society and the planet as a whole, especially now, need us. We want to do what we can to alleviate their fear, anger, and painful groundlessness. Bodhicitta, the awakened heart, begins with the wish to be free from whatever blocks us. So that's an important and powerful teaching at a time like this, I think. You know, fear is natural and experience is real that we've all just had and are having. But I was looking at another book Pema's books, I always recommend Pema's books, but one of my favorite teachers is Sharon Salzberg, and she has a new book out called Real Change. And I don't know if any of you have seen it, but I do recommend it. It's in it, she talks about that we all operate with what she calls a stress dynamic, that there are things that happen inside and in our lives and in our relationships and in our you know, communities and our planet. And that's a reality. And I can't make that go away just by giving a happy talk on a Monday night. And, you know, we can't make that go away because there's been one election that hopefully had some outcomes that you appreciated. So stress, that stress dynamic is true. That's how we keep ourselves from getting in trouble. We keep ourselves, you know, all the talk about our autonomic nervous system is there to keep us from getting in too much trouble. So we have some stress. You know, our prefrontal cortex is there to keep us out of trouble, as it were. And so what Sharon says is that the true issue for us as Buddhists is how we arouse the mind of compassion, the mind of care. And so we all have a stress dynamic, and for each of us, it's different. And so far be it for me to tell anybody else how to hold stress. But what Sharon suggests is what we can do is help people with what our capacity for arousing compassion and arousing love and arousing connection. She talks about in that book that the word dharma, we always think of as the truth or things the way they are. And so that's, you know, as we live the dharma, we have to be realistic. This is the way things are. This is the truth. But she says that if you actually translate from the Sanskrit, that what the word actually means is that which we can rely on, that which supports us. And so it's a very interesting way to think about it. Even she says, when things are falling apart, that which sustains us, that which we can rely on, that which upholds us, that's actually what that means. So as we're looking at life in 2020 and in our own lives as they go, one of the questions we get to ask us ourselves is, what is our life right now? If we want to sustain our life, what is that? And are we willing to take a good look at that? You know, how wedded are we to living in frustration and anger and the complexities of the last few years? And she says, if you just think about, and I've said this in the talk once before here, at least, that if you think about February of 2020, and if you were thinking about your Dharma, then that which is true, or that which that upon which you can rely, that which sustains you, and you think about November, even if there wasn't an election, you think about November, what was your life then and what is it now? What is the essence of your life before shelter in place, and what is the essence of your life now? So what's still true? And that, I think, is one of the delightful gifts of our Buddhist practice, is that we get this opportunity to say, okay, I have a different life. So the question, which is asked in mindful awareness, am I willing to have a different life? The answer is, I have a different life. Whether I'm willing or not, I actually have one. Shelter in place for all these months has moved us to someplace else. And so am I willing to really engage that? And, you know, I was thinking about, I don't know if some of you heard a podcast over the weekend with a guy named Yuval Harari. He's the author of a book called Sapiens, which some of you have probably read. And I just ordered it. I think it's way over my head scientifically, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway. But he talks about, you know, are we living in a utopia or a dystopia? And what he's thinking about is that he says that the most important commodity in 2020 is human attention. And that all of these companies and commercial organizations have paid a lot of money to the smartest people that they could afford to hire to develop algorithms to keep us on their platforms. So it's not mysterious. It's the attention is the commodity. The longer we stay on the platforms, the more we buy into or purchase what they're trying to sell. And he says that what they've done, and in his book, he talks about this, they know, he says, they know us better than we know ourselves. And what they've discovered is that the way to keep people on platforms, my guess as he was talking was that it was gonna be sex, put sexy things on there and we'd stay. Not so, nay, not so. The two ways that they can keep people on the platforms the longest is anger and fear. Anger and fear. Fear that, you know, on the commercial side, that you're not going to have the right things, that you need something else, that, you know, so it's operating there. But the number one thing in the last several years has been anger. And so the algorithm is that, you know, it operates on the notion that they know us better than we do by putting together everything that you look at, things you say in text messages and emails, that they're gleaning information from that. And that, you know, therefore they know us better than we do. And so I listened to that, and I started reading some articles by him, and then there are other people doing the same sort of work. And it was really concerning to me that a machine, you know, the technology could know us better than we know ourselves. And then I thought about why we're all here together, and the great, wonderful gift we have of Buddhist practice. And the Buddhist practice is, every bit of it is designed for us to return to our authentic self. And I don't know about you, but I know that my authentic self is not an authentic self that is primarily motivated by fear or anger or rage. At my center, I'm motivated by connection. I'm motivated by being of service to folks. And I'm motivated by love. And you know, I discovered that about myself after lots of years of being, I was worked in politics for years. And so I discovered a lot of that. But I think that's one of the things that I'm hoping that we can bring all together as we think about the world we live in, a world in which human attention, getting attention is gonna be the core of the economy, according to several of the articles that I looked at this weekend, and is the core of the economy. So if human attention is the commodity, and that getting us and sustaining our attention to a particular platform is real power. That's the real power of this generation. As we switch from trying to sell products and that the products were the main thing to trying to get our attention so that we'll do what the politicians want us to do and move forward in that direction. So I think that this business of being aware that at our core, we have this capacity for delight and for compassion and for love, and that Buddhist practice is about returning to that authentic self. So however you define your authentic self, or you look at it and you think about it, there's a wonderful little book that was written by a guy named Ross Gay. It's called The Book of Delight, The Book of Delights. And I think I might've mentioned it here before, but he has an essay in there called Joy is Such a Human Madness. And he dissects the word delight as to delight conveying both of light and without light. And so what he suggests in his book is that, you know, it's not being unrealistic that everything's perky and wonderful, but that it's this idea that we can concentrate on that which brings us joy and hope. The Buddha said the one thing which you all possess and you have, and if you have it, you have all of the virtues, is compassion. And so compassion, which he defines as, in his teachings, as connection. So compassion is that sense of concern that arises when we are confronted with another suffering and we feel motivated to see that suffering relieved. So the teaching of the Buddha that there is suffering and that there's an end to suffering. And what he says in his teaching about compassion is that that sense of concern that arises when we are confronted with another suffering and feel motivated to see that suffering relieved. Compassion is what connects the feeling of empathy to actual action regarding kindness and generosity. So I think that that's probably enough for tonight, but I just want to read you in closing. There's a wonderful little poem called Blessing. It's from an Irish author named John O'Donohue. And as we think about how delighted we were on Saturday and how delighted we can continue to be, not in spite of what's going on in the world, but that inclusive of what's going on in the world. Our opportunity is to show up, not in denial, but fully connected to other beings and to the realities of the world in which we live. But this little poem is, it's called A Blessing. It's Binoc in Irish, which is the language it was written in. One day when the weight deadens on your shoulders and you stumble, may the clay dance to balance you. And when your eyes freeze behind the gray window and the ghost of loss gets into you, may a flock of colors, indigo, red, green, and azure blue, come to awaken in you a meadow of delight. When the canvas frays and the crook of thought and a stain of ocean blackens beneath you, may there come across the water a path of yellow moonlight to bring you safely home. May the nourishment of the earth be yours and the clarity of light be yours. May the fluency of the ocean be yours. May the protection of the ancestors be yours. And so may a slow wind that works these words of love around you, an invisible cloak to mind your life. So may you all live in delight and reality in good balance. Thank you, everyone. And I think we have a little bit of time if anybody has a question or a comment or a thought.
You're mute.
What was that quote? You can begin your life again. You quoted someone. I like that. Resonated with me because I'm beginning my life again in a new place. So,
oh, wonderful.
Sort of beginning again.
Yeah. It was Jane Hirschfield, and she says it's the poem is called in the book Unfinished Business of Living Fully, and she says, you may do this, I tell you. It is permitted. Begin again the story of your life.
I like that.
Great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Stephen, I loved the all the dancing and celebrations on Saturday. And it made me think of the Emma Goldman quote about dancing. If I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution.
Yes.
How I love your message today and just how important it is to hold on to that joy and just the delight, just the all the spontaneous delight that you saw. I mean, I talked to colleagues all over the country today and they were saying down in LA, they started blocking off the streets from cars and just started, you know, it was like an all day party with their kids and everything. And I just, let's all hold on to that as we move forward.
Yeah, it's so important to savor it, to really hold it, because lots of stuff will potentially come up that will try to drive it out of us. But, you know, I love that Irish blessing that, like, you know, like, just may you keep it, may you keep it. The possibility, Shanti Deva says, of a life of serenity, peace, and ease, authenticity, peace, and ease.
Yeah, I remember the old, in the time of the Buddha, his followers, the monks and nuns were called the happy ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he talked a lot about that there is suffering and there's an end to suffering, and they were known as the happy ones. So when I first heard that many years ago, I just thought of all these nuns and monks dancing around, kind of floating through the air, sort of, or wherever they were going, but they were happy.
Yeah. And it's part of what we can do as Buddhists is, you know, our metta practice is if we can savor that moment of delight or moments that we felt on Saturday, look around and see that in people's faces, and then do whatever we can, as Pema Chodron said, you know, to share that. You know, I love that lyric that I shared with you in the beginning. It's like, yeah, there's lots of other mountains to climb, but, you know, for just this moment, let's figure out that on Saturday we were on the top of a really beautiful people mountain that, it had lots of delight in it.
Yeah, they say that enlightenment is the joy that has no opposite, you know?
Yeah.
Heard someone say that?
Really? Yeah.
If not, you just did, and we'll all quote you for the rest of the evening, Lynn.
Thank you, Steve.
I didn't hear you. Could you say it again, please?
Enlightenment is the joy that has no opposite, you know? It's when I moments, it was just connected to everything and just the joy of existing, you know, that
was extraordinary. It was just, you know, oh my God, I'm here, you know. It's raining on me and I'm delighted to be experiencing, you know, getting wet.
Yes. I was walking down the street and you know, a woman who I'd never seen before just looked me right in the eye and she smiled. She said, "Congratulations." And I thought, oh, we live in a place where that's probably safe to do. But, you know, and I also ran into my neighbors who were like old school political hippies. And they were like, you know, we can't stop the fight. And I think to be joyous is not to think the fight is over or that we have to, you know, let up at all. But I think it's, you know, we have to remember that there's no duality. We can be happy about, you know, the result, and also, you know that there is still a lot of work to do. So thank you for that message, Stephen. It really was really great.
Yeah, there's a Native American's line, a sentence, quote that says, healing does not mean that the trauma did not exist. Healing means that you won't let it be the organizing principle of your life for right now.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, thank you. Thank you so much for that uplifting talk to keep joy in our lives and, you know, not let that go, even in the midst of all of the other struggles that we have. So that's a wonderful, wonderful teaching. So let's sit together for a minute or two as we close.